How do you say this without being perverted?
Have I? Oh, wow.
Have
anyway,
you
no,
played
I,
games
I,
with not my nuts?
It still sounds
bad. I don't know if that's any better.
All right, welcome to episode 57 of the Rated NA podcast for nerdappropriate.com. We are here on a beautiful Saturday morning, and everybody's back from last week. Hillary is joining us again.
Cool.
Yay. Yep.
She's back for more punishment. We were like, Hillary, we really liked having you. She's like, I'll come back. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I was like, really?
I think it was
come back?
It was the galactic readiness comment. I'm going to tell you that.
I know.
Oh, God.
Can't help myself sometimes.
PR, sorry.
So we've had a kind of all we've been chatting before. Oh, my voice is going. Hold on.
Wow.
Already. All right. So we were chatting before the podcast started, and we've all had kind of a bit of a long week. But let's share. What have you guys been doing? What's been going on?
Scott.
Well,
Scott went away, didn't you?
Yeah, I spent half of the week in Baltimore at a totally awesome con, you guys. I mean, I got the swag here. Hold on. This is the kind of swag you get at, this is what you get at my convention. It's this cool bag. It's a nice computer bag.
It's actually a really cool bag. I'm not even being facetious here.
Yeah, but it's got the logo on it. So unless you're a big fan of the spy defense and security sensing convention.
I am a fan of that. That is amazing.
And you can learn about all kinds of awesome things like a field deployable device for the rapid detection of cyanide poisoning in whole blood.
Or, are you serious?
Or
yeah. You see, Scott thinks that like what he does is totally normal and boring, but the rest of us think it's like amazing. And
yeah.
So every time he talks about this stuff, I'm like, are you serious? You got to go look at spy stuff? And he's like, yeah, whatever. Robots.
this particular conference was like mostly like a photonics convention. So like I think it's like the science of light or something. So there was a lot of sensor technology, like laser beams and lenses and stuff like that.
When I was a little kid, my parents wouldn't buy me laser tag because it was too expensive. So they bought me Photon, and Photon was like the ghetto laser tag. So that's
there
the
you go.
Why I know what Photon
that's
is.
That's what it is. And yeah. So like the funny thing is that, you know, it's got very similar vibes to like a regular con, except like the expo floor is people selling like infrared cameras and laser beams instead of video games and t-shirts.
Amazing.
You know,
are there booth babes that are like overweight hairy dudes?
No, I mean, just a lot of like suits and polo shirts, you know, and like,
oh, man.
Like there is business that's happening there, but
you should
be
a booth babe at Science Con.
Yeah, right. I was
dress
definitely
up as a drone.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
I was totally a fish out of water at this meeting, but that was my week. So hopefully
cool.
Someone else did something a little more fun than that. I went to Baltimore, but it was a pretty good trip. It's a pretty chill downtown area.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm happy to be back. So that's really the point of my story, is that it's nice to be back in town.
That's cool.
Matt, did you survive?
I did not see the Avengers, and I had full opportunity to.
I saw that. Okay, first of all, this is Matt tweets out, hey, I didn't go see the Avengers with everyone from Marvel because I love my wife.
No. I said I wanted. That is not what I said. I said, I want it noted in the Library of Congress that I missed the Avengers so I can see it with my wife, is what I said.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Library of Congress notes all your tweets now, if you don't.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
But no,
here's
the brilliant the brilliant thing about why wives ruin lives. Sorry, Hillary. it's that what happened was when they wrote out for tickets, they said, all right, if you want tickets to see the Avengers on Thursday, reply to this email. And Melissa was online with me, and I was like, holy shit, the Avengers, they just wrote about the Avengers. It's Thursday, I want to go. And she's like, oh, don't go see that without me. I want to see that, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, really? She's like, yeah, it's Joss Whedon. And I was like, okay, she is a Joss Whedon fan. I will give her that much. I was like, all right, it's fine. Just give me a couple weeks. I'll wait. No big deal, whatever. So I tell her I'll wait. And then she says that we had another conversation at some point where she told me it was okay to go. But what ends up, all I know is the next thing is I'm having drinks with the crew before they go see the movie, and I text her, and I like guilty text her, you know, like, oh, just having drinks with everybody before they go see Avengers, like wah wah, like that kind of thing. And she's like, you can totally go. This is 30 minutes before the movie's going to start. There's no way I can get in at this point, like zero way. And I'm like, are you serious? I'm like, it's completely sold out. There's no way I can go to the movie. And she's like, I told you you could go, blah, blah, blah. So I went home all. And then of course, I go work the next. Well, actually, I get home and I like open up Twitter and everybody starts filtering out of the movie from Marvel. And all I see is just like endless tweets about the Avengers. I just closed it. I was like, I can't look at this.
That sucks.
But I will say this, I have heard nothing but hugely positive things about the movie, that it's an amazing movie, everybody loved it, and I want to say it made something like $40 million in its opening night in Europe, so it's going to do pretty well, I think.
Excellent.
Yeah, the sabotage card, wives like to play that one. Not going to lie.
Well, hopefully you get some good husband tool. Karma.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah.
What about you, Hillary? What have you been doing this week?
Basically just working, because that's boring. And lots of happy hour with work people, which is sometimes fun.
Cool.
That's about it. No, my life is boring. I did play games, so that's probably the highlight of my week.
Good.
That's never boring.
I'm right there with you. My week was pretty boring. I did catch up on some stuff. I actually, the good thing is I found myself enjoying a couple games that I'll talk about today that I haven't really played that much since Mass Effect came out, just because I was in like this weird vortex of Mass Effect, which is a good vortex to be in. But every time I'd plug a different game in, I'm like, this isn't as enjoyable as Mass Effect multiplayer. And so I just go back to Mass Effect multiplayer. But I did play some stuff that's a lot of fun that we'll talk about today. But Wait, were you with you.
Were you in a Mass Effect vortex or a Mass Effect singularity?
Ooh, that's a good one. It's definitely a singularity.
Let's get things straight here.
But I'm right there with Hillary. Just a busy work week. Not a lot of joyous fun to report. My family did come into town to visit. I hadn't seen them since December, so it was good to see my folks for a night. So that was good. But other than that, same old, same old.
Let's do the rundown.
So what are we doing this week?
So we got Adam Sessler leaving G4. We have PAX Prime news, some stuff on Game of Thrones, which has got a new game coming out. Of course, something about Mass Effect 3, because God forbid we get through a podcast without mentioning it. And then Fringe has some news as well. We're doing reviews of the new Xbox Live Arcade Walking Dead. We've got Dragon's Dogma. The recap on Witcher 2, Ash, and Hillary, did you go see Cabin in the Woods too? No? Yay?
I did not.
Okay. Ash went and saw Cabin in the Woods. And then Mass Effect Homeworlds number 1, which is the new book out. And then the Twitter question.
And the Twitter question was, with a new console on the horizon, what game or feature would make you excited enough to upgrade? And that's a modified version of what Matt sent me. Matt was like, what would make you destroy your console and throw it out the window? And I was like, that's
It was an exciting question, Ash.
It was.
I know how to entice excitement.
It was. Unfortunately, it was too many characters, so I had to abbreviate.
So anyways, Ash, get into this Adam Sessler leaving G4.
All right. So Hillary informed me of this, and I want to give her credit for this, because I was at work, and I sent a text out saying, hey, we got to come up with a Twitter question of the week. And she's like, well, why don't we ask people about what they think about Adam Sessler leaving G4? And I was at work, and I did like a total like, what the fuck? And I was like, Adam Sessler leaving G4. So I did the same thing again. I was a bad teacher, and I went and sat at my desk for a minute. I'm like, you teenagers do something for a couple minutes. And I'm like pulling it up on my computer, and I was like, holy crap. Because I was blown away. I mean, the guy's been there forever. So when I saw that, I was like, okay, we're going to have to talk about this, because I think all of us probably, you know, in a sense, grew up at least reading his reviews or watching him on TV a bit. So it is kind of shocking, and I'm kind of curious as to what he's going to do. How did you all find out about this? Because I found out.
Abby Heppy tweeted out, good luck to Adam Sessler. It was like 11 a.m. and she tweeted out that, like, good luck to Adam Sessler. He was one of the best people I ever worked with, or something along that line.
Oh, okay.
And so then I was like, what? And I started looking through, like, tweets trying to figure out what happened, and I couldn't find anything. And then I Googled it, and it finally came up that G4 had announced that he was done. that day.
Interesting.
I think I saw somebody tweet it. I think it was at Nerd Appropriate. I think tweeted something about it. So I was in the middle of a meeting and decided to just abandon the presentation I was watching and then start Googling on my phone to find the story. So, excuse me, I need to go outside for a moment. Hold on.
I did the same thing. It felt like a big deal at the time.
So Hillary, how did you hear?
Basically, I was just watching Twitter at work, which is normal. And basically, David Bass at Star Wars, he tweeted something about missing Sessler's rants. Yeah. And I'm like, that's strange. So then I did some research and found out that Sessler's gone. And actually, a funny story, when I saw the Mass Effect 3 demo at E3, I was literally sitting in his lap. So,
oh, wow. Wow.
So
hey-o.
I was like, hey, I kind of know that guy. No, not really. But yeah, so it was a kind of a funny thing. But yeah, no, I don't know. There hasn't been any kind of news about that. It's just he just is gone, right?
Well, his people came out and said that he's going to aid a couple of production companies as far as like games being made into movies, and that he's got some plans to be in front of the camera still doing something, but they haven't made any official announcements as to where he's going to go.
I wouldn't be surprised if he got recruited by Vox Games, you know, the super
Verge
conglomerate.
Guys.
Yeah, the Verge guy. I wouldn't be surprised if they dragged him in, because they're creating like basically like the Avengers version of video game journalists right now. And they're recruiting from like Joystick and Kotaku, and they're basically pulling like everybody in, like Mick Elroy and all those guys.
I don't think he wants to write. I think he wants to be on
Sessler.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
What if he was their on-camera guy?
I mean, this
is all speculation, but I'm saying the timing's a little weird. It's just G4 without Adam Sessler doing game stuff is weird. I mean, he was in charge of their games department for a very long time.
Does anyone wonder why this was so fast? I mean, they literally announced the day that he left, which is weird, and it was like a Wednesday. It wasn't like he left on a Friday. It was like the middle of the week. He just was like, I'm out, everybody, and like took off.
Yeah.
Normally, I would say that there's either one of two things happen, and I'm not saying that this is the case for Sessler. I would think that A, he got fired, or B, he's going to rehab.
Right, yeah.
Like, I don't think either of those things are really happening, so that I had to pull those opinions to rest.
No, I mean, I ran into him. I don't want to get it. Anyway, moving on. I'll tell that story when we're not recording.
You know, I will say that from reading the comments, like on the you know, big gaming blogs, it seems like the overwhelming feeling is like, oh well, like I have no more reason to watch G4 anymore. Like you know, G4 sucks now, and like then there's kind of like that long live tech TV movement again. You know that people have that. You know, every time there's G4 news, it's always like tech TV was so much better. You know, like that's always the thing.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the vibe, is that like people are generally happy for him, but they're still like getting disappointed in the network because they show like Cops reruns, you know, throughout the day or whatever. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's hard. I mean, and you know, G4 is really good at kind of just ignoring I don't want to say ignoring their community, because that's mean, but when someone leaves, they just like, it's like an iron curtain goes up, and they're like, "We're just not going to fucking talk about it." Like, you know, and it's just like,
maybe that's why it happens so suddenly.
Yeah, I mean, it might have been in the works for a while. They're just very good at like pretending that nothing is wrong, you know, which is sort of their thing. So, anyway, we wish Adam Sessler a lot of luck, and whatever it is he's doing, I'm sure it's going to be pretty awesome, because he's been around for many, many years.
Yeah, definitely. So next up, Ash, you talked about this. I don't know what actually happened.
So. Yeah. So I was, again, monitoring Twitter when I should have been being responsible. And I didn't even realize that PAX Prime registration was opening up. I believe it was, I want to say, Wednesday of last week. And it was only open for like a few minutes. And then the same exact thing that happened to San Diego Comic-Con this year happened to PAX Prime. Basically, they got... They tweeted out that the registration was open, and it got flooded and crashed their login and registration service, and no one knew if they actually got tickets, and basically they had to go in and shut everything down. It was down for a couple hours, and then it reopened again for about 2.5 minutes, and then crashed again, and still no one knew if they got tickets or what the deal was. Some of the people that follow us on Twitter were able to get through and actually get their tickets, but
the same thing that happened to Comic-Con. They're keeping it closed down until they actually switch ticket registration services, and then they're going to reopen registration in a couple, I guess, weeks, looks like. So, again, it's just kind of weird and frustrating, and Matt the web gentleman probably knows a little bit more about how this happens and why it's happening, so maybe I should toss the mic, Matt.
I give PAX more credit because they have not historically been rushed to have registration, so this is kind of the first time it's happened to them. East never has this happen. The last PAX Prime didn't have this happen. So, you know, you should always prepare for the fact that a million people want to come to your website in 1 minute, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen, and they apparently just weren't prepared. And when you have a rush of, you know, however many thousands of people all hit a server within a minute, it's going to do some damage if you're not ready for it. So
yeah, it's true.
Do you think they just need to build a comic carnival, like a permanent theme park for these conventions? Because they seem to, the response to them seems to be overwhelming at this point. It might just do them better just to have you pay $80 admission and you can just go to the convention theme park for the day, and like whatever's happening there, you just go do it, like that kind of thing. Because it seems
we should open one.
It's blown up.
That's a great idea.
Land.
Yeah.
That'll be inappropriate. Not appropriate.
They have entire theme parks dedicated to Legos, so why not?
To the Kickstarter.
Yeah, to the Kickstarter.
We only need $40 million.
We can do it.
And you can get a season pass.
Do you think that maybe fans are conditioned to flood sites now just because of all of the shenanigans with Comic-Con? I know that I'd be freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
I'd want my ticket in my hand like that second.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
go ahead, Matt.
It's kind of the nature of the beast when it's all done by Twitter. It's instant. You know, everything's instant. So like when you post a blog post and say, "Hey, registration's open," not everyone's necessarily going to be at the blog at that moment to see it. But when something gets transmitted to 80,000 or 100,000 people at the same exact moment, and all 100,000 of those people want tickets, they're all going to rush at the same time because they think they're going to sell out.
Yeah. Right.
So. Did past PAX ever actually sold out? Did it sell out completely?
Yeah, it sold out. Last year, it did. PAX Prime.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't like a day,
over the
right?
course of like, yeah. It's always over the course of a couple weeks, actually. I mean, East sold out, a couple weeks after 3 days. Well, maybe not a couple weeks, but I know all the tickets sold out after the course of a couple weeks. So it's not like Comic-Con, which sells out within a few hours. But
right.
PAX is definitely getting there, and I think we're going to see, like you said, people are getting conditioned to get their ticket as soon as possible, which is, it's sort of like a pack mentality. Everybody has to rush there, get their ticket, and be like, and then everyone's like, "Oh crap, I better get my ticket." And so it's all of a sudden it just goes, mm-hmm. buck wild.
Yeah.
So
I would just like to say that I think it's interesting in the East West Coast war that PAX Uh-oh. East is PAX East and PAX West is actually PAX Prime.
Oh
yeah.
So go
that's
West
true.
Coast.
So now you're taking
LA.
Seattle and Portland in with LA?
Yeah, we're all on the west side.
I'm going to be honest. I don't think Seattle and Portland want to be part of LA.
The gang war continues.
Naughty.
Oh, boy. Let's all be friends, guys. Don't shoot.
Not my nuts.
So moving forward.
Uh-oh.
Moving
not my
forward.
Nuts. Have you played with Not My Nuts? Whoa, hey.
No.
Wow.
That came out wrong. Hillary, have you played with... I can't even say it. How do you say this without being perverted?
Have I... Oh, wow.
Have
anyway,
you
no,
played
I,
games
I,
with
I...
Not My Nuts?
It still sounds bad.
I don't
bad.
Know if that's any better. I actually have seen Not My Nuts online, but I was too busy playing The Witcher. He or she sent me a game request, and I was very, very tempted to play with Not My Nuts. So, yeah, no,
super
not. I wonder how many friend requests he got.
Game and do it.
Yes. Hopefully everyone went out to their Xbox Live and friended our awesome Not My Nuts because he's fantastic.
I hope so, too.
And if you haven't, do it now.
Yeah. I need to add him ASAP.
Connect today.
So whose news is this Game of Thrones? Because I'm intrigued.
I just threw this on there because I keep wanting to see more and more Game of Thrones things because I love the series and the books and everything. But the game, honestly, is not making me want to buy it. And I'm not sure. I don't know if you guys seen it. I've watched the trailers and things like that. I'm just not sure. I'm not sure about it. And then it begs a bigger question. Can things like movies and TV shows translate into games and vice versa? I mean, how many times have we seen the game movie that just didn't really work out?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. I don't know. I think I'll wait on the 5th. It releases on the 15th of May. So yeah. I think I'll wait to see about that. But yeah, anything Game of Thrones is usually like, take my money. But
yeah. Which, is this the Game of Thrones Genesis? Is that the game? Or is there yet a different game?
No, there's like it's this Game of Thrones, and it's a console, PC, all of the above game.
Visually, it looks amazing. I mean, it looks great. But I think the problem with the Game of Thrones IP is that a lot of the book is politics. And how do you translate politics into an RPG experience? And that is a great question. Can different IPs actually translate to video games? And most of the time, the answer, I think, is definitely going to be no. It just doesn't work, because games are designed, for the most part, to be games. And, structurally, that's what makes them work. They're built from the ground up to be a game. But when you take something like a novel, a really rich, in-depth novel, and you try and translate to a game, you're going to lose a lot of what makes that novel special. The game visually looks amazing, but the question is, can they capture that same feeling that you get from the novel and actually put it in a digital format? So I don't know. What do you guys think?
Do you think you're also going to have that same problem that like Ash had with Kingdoms of Amalur, where you look at it and all of a sudden you immediately want to compare it to a BioWare game? Like that, because that was the first thing you said about it, is that it's hard not to do that.
Yeah. I'm going to have that problem, I think, for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, on the reverse, though, if Skyrim were to become a movie, and let's say they took like one small thread of Skyrim or even just Oblivion or any of the Elder Scrolls stuff and set it within that world, I probably would dig it. But it depends on how they do it. But I don't know. I mean, the Game of Thrones game looks like, you take the black, and it looks like there's a story around that, and it does look like they've incorporated a lot of the politics, but it's not even though it's set in the same world, it's not like you're going to be like trying to outmaneuver Cersei or trying to take up arms with Jon Snow, but maybe so, you will. I don't know.
But I think you just said it, and I'm going to totally partially lose my nerd card, which I think Scott knows this, but I can't stand the Game of Thrones books. I think they're obnoxious to me. Yeah.
East Coast, West Coast. Slap fight.
No, I think I started watching the TV show, and I like the TV show a little better. The books, it's like Lord of the Rings to me. It's like 90% world and 10% then it gets into the story. Like he's really good at crafting this massive world that is real feeling, whatever. We're getting into a side note that doesn't matter. But anyways, what I was going to say about
the best part is Hillary's
said,
disapproving face right
it's
now.
Fine.
She's I'm looking biting my lips like her.
It's okay. No. There's a good point, though, that Skyrim, what you said about Skyrim, I think if they did the reverse with this, where instead of trying to make a game based on Game of Thrones, the book, but they made a game set in the world of Game of Thrones, I think that could be good. Like, I think they could do a lot with that kind of history and world and setting versus just playing a storyline or being a thing from the Game of Thrones book itself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, what
you said with Skyrim was like, if they just took a story from the world of Skyrim and made a movie, and it's like, well, yeah, if they did the opposite to me, like if they just took the world from the setting of Game of Thrones and made the game, then I think it could be cool.
I agree.
Yay, nay, I don't know.
No, I agree. It's hard. It's a hard thing to really capture, but I really am eager to see how this game reviews, because I'm excited for a new RPG. I think it's time. I love RPGs, and if it's great, of course I'll play it. But I don't want to be the guinea pig.
Yeah.
RPGs are hard to dive into because it's like you have to invest, a week of your life to beating it. So it's like, do you really want to dive in and play something new if it's going to be poor?
And then there's the other side where you see like the Lord of the Rings games that get made that are like fluffy takes on Lord of the Rings, and you're like, this is horrible. It's not even fun. Like it's like a hack and slash Lord of the Rings, which doesn't make any sense.
Well, I just remember, you know, being a kid playing like Harry Potter video game, or, you know, insert like Little Mermaid or something, and it just felt like every time that they tried to translate any of, you know, the franchisee movies into games, it just was, you know, 3 hours later and you've already passed it. So
yeah,
I don't know.
No, I
think
that.
I think my counterpoint would be like Batman Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, then.
Yeah,
those are great games.
You know, where they didn't just translate Batman into a game. They took like the setting of the world of Batman and made you feel like Batman, and then made a great game about it. You know.
Yes.
So.
Good stuff.
Alrighty.
Yay. So yeah, the 15th of May, Game of Thrones releases.
But you're gonna wait.
You're gonna wait.
You know what? I don't know. It's maybe I'll take one for the team.
Yeah.
And I'll get it the day it releases, and then I'll play it and tell you how awesome and how wrong I am in assuming that it was a bad thing. So yes. We'll see.
Hopefully it's great.
Hopefully I'm not a hater.
Yes. All right. So whose Mass Effect news is this? Because I had not heard that.
This is Scott.
So I am a fan of Moog stuff, so I'm on the Moog mailing list, and recently, maybe a few months ago, they released a couple of apps for iOS, and one of them was called the Animoog, which is basically a software Moog, like, music-making device. I don't know if you can see the screenshot. So it's got a bunch of presets built in. You can make your own, like, sounds. You can do stuff like that, mm-hmm. and like do your own waveforms and whatnot. So basically the news is that they recently released an expansion pack for the Animoog called the Divine Expansion Pack. And to promote it, one of the composers from Mass Effect 3 used the expansion pack to contribute a track to their marketing campaign. The composer's name is Sasha, and I'm not going to butcher the last name. But
I was hoping you were going to say that.
No, but he goes by Sonic Mayhem, and we'll put a link in the show notes to the web page containing the track that that he contributed. And then we should put a link up to Sonic Mayhem's website too, because you can go to the portfolio and check out the tracks that were contributed to Mass Effect 3, as well as the two of the Mass Effect 2 DLC packages as well, and it's pretty cool stuff. So
awesome.
I just thought we'd give that a listen. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So like, if you're a fan of Mass Effect 3 composers, check out Sonic Mayhem. If you're a fan of making music on your iPhone, check out the Animoog.
Yeah, it's a cool
I didn't even know that existed.
And the iPad app is awesome as well.
We should also note that Scott is a Moog player, and he's quite skilled.
Scott has a Moog tattoo. That's how much of a
Moog player he is.
It's right above his, so it's a little embarrassing.
It's what you cut out there.
You cut out. I don't know what you just said.
I was saying your Moog tattoo is right above your butt crack, so it's a little embarrassing.
Yeah, it is a tramp stamp.
Yeah.
All right, so this last bit of news I threw in for Scott, it got announced, I think, Friday. Fox said they are giving Fringe a final fifth season, so it won't be canceled before the end. They're going to give them a chance to end the show, and it'll be five seasons long after basically horrible ratings but great critical praise, and they've kind of let the show limp along for the past couple of years.
This seems like a total about-face for Fox, and they're like basically the way they treat science fiction programming, and I think this is really awesome.
Yeah.
And I remember we talked about it on an earlier podcast where the one of the people in control of the programming was basically like, please don't send me letters. Like, I know I love the show too. Yeah. You know, we're just losing money on the show and there's nothing we can do about it. And
don't
this is
send
just
us
great
cupcakes
news.
And donuts and all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or whatever's peanuts.
Or peanuts, yeah.
Do you guys remember that with Jericho?
Yeah,
I do. I remember the Jericho peanut. I never watched it.
I never watched it either. I always heard really great things about it.
It was amazing.
That was with Dylan McKay, right? I mean, what was his name? I just said his 90210 name. Sorry.
Wow, Luke Perry? No.
That's not the Luke Perry one?
No. It was.
Oh, that's with the guy from Scream, Skeet.
Yes, Skeet Ulrich or something. Skeet.
Oh my God.
No, but Jericho is the best.
We say Skeet
the
single podcast. Sorry.
Skeet.
God. What's going on with you this morning, man?
Wow.
I'm okay.
He's got some Baileys in his coffee.
I'm losing my mind today. I'm sorry. It was such a long week.
Let's take a break and we'll come back and we'll do some reviews because I don't know what's happening right now.
All right.
All right, and we're back. So we're going to do reviews, and the first review we're going to do today is for The Walking Dead, which is a series, like a chapter-based game from Telltale Games, and they have done games in the past, adventure games like Sam & Max and Back to the Future and Jurassic Park and stuff like that. So now they're taking their talents to The Walking Dead. And I think Ash and I know Ash completed it, and I played part of it. Did anyone else get a chance to play it?
I'm tired of zombies, so you guys need to tell me why I should play this.
Okay, well, they're not zombies; they're just the Walking Dead.
Well, yeah, sure.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. Right, okay. All right, so I was, you know, I'll never get tired of zombies, but I was
no spoilers. P.S.
No spoilers. This is spoiler free. Okay. So I was apprehensive about this title as well, for the same reason why I'm a little apprehensive about Game of Thrones, translating a television series or a written piece of work directly into a game is a challenging thing to do, because you have to capture the exact feeling and the emotion of the experience of reading it or watching it. So that is really, really, really close to impossible to pull off. But I have to say that this title is totally phenomenal. It absolutely captures the vibe and the tone of the comic book series. And it is a lot of fun. And I found it to be actually pretty damn scary, and it takes a lot for me to get scared by a game, but there are sequences in this game. It is an adventure title, so a lot of it is kind of quick timey, but there are quick time sequences where I was fumbling with the controller to hit buttons so quickly that I was literally like groaning in my, you know, in my chair, like, oh my god, like trying to hit things.
Wait, what?
Yeah, that sounded bad again. Damn, oh. Innuendo. Grabbing things and groaning in my chair. yeah, sorry. But graphically, it looks similar to the art style of the comic book series. Obviously, it's in 3D. It's cel-shaded art. Really, really pretty to look at. Kind of cartoony. Scott, what did you think of the look of the game since you did get your hands on it?
I thought it was great. And my major concern about the game is basically the pedigree of Telltale Games, which is like, if you look at a game at like Sam and Max, like the game mechanic in Sam and Max is, you know, adventure style. So it's like, you know, you have to get the toilet plunger and you give it to the rhinoceros, and then the rhinoceros farts in a jar and you take that to the other guy. You know what I mean? And you're like,
yeah.
In my head, I'm like, how is this ever going to make sense for The Walking Dead if like it's just a bunch of like esoteric puzzles strung together?
Yeah.
To create like a narrative that's kind of like irreverent and funny. And none of that translates to The Walking Dead, but they basically sort of recreated themselves in what they do in this game.
Yeah.
And to me, the first thing that I thought of was like a game like Heavy Rain. Mm-hmm. Because the drama in the game is like so heavy, and it's like, it's not really like a feel good game, because all the stuff that happens in the game is pretty like dark, and you have to,
yeah,
you know, you have to make choices about what you want to do in certain scenarios. And
yeah.
I guess the game tells you up front that the choices you make like have an impact on the story in the game and chapters later on down the line. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's decisions you make early on where you're basically caught between a rock and a hard place, and there you have an option. It's like, do you save this person or do you save this person? They're both being attacked by the undead, and whatever decision you make, one character will be erased from your narrative for the rest of the five chapters.
Huh.
And, you know, it's like Ashley Kaiden experience from Mass Effect 1, where all of a sudden this person's erased from your entire game. The same thing happens in The Walking Dead several times, but the thing that I found to be really amazing about this is they do give you, it is, the tone of the comic is, it's very slow and plodding, and you get to know a lot of people. It's a lot, it's dramatic. There's a lot of conversation between the characters. So every death
that occurs has a lot of meaning. It's not just like a person in a red shirt getting killed. It is a person that has a backstory and a history and you know, getting eliminated. So that's kind of cool. And I just found it to be very eerie. Like, there's, you know, it, the whole game kind of feels like the calm before the storm. And then when all shit breaks loose, all shit really breaks loose. So,
so you're not playing as any of the main characters in Walking Dead, though, right?
No, okay, so it runs parallel to the story in the comic book. It takes place in Macon, Georgia, about 2 weeks before the comic book series. So the comic book series takes place after a couple weeks after the zombie apocalypse has already happened. This game takes place as the zombie apocalypse is happening. So you get to see, like, the breakdown of society. You get to see the power finally getting shut down. You get to see just, you know, how initially everyone thinks, like, oh, this will blow over in a couple days. And then finally coming to the realization that, like, hey, this isn't really going to blow over. We're all fucked, you know?
Yeah.
So the tone of it is what I really, really enjoyed. And it is, like I said, genuinely scary. I think Telltale did an amazing job with this. Absolutely. What about you? How far have you gotten so far, Scott?
I've made it to the pharmacy so far.
Okay. So you're a good ways in. So
yeah, it's
you made your decision.
Yeah, I did make a decision, and that's the interesting thing is that I feel like you could go back and probably replay this game a couple of times and try the other decisions. And it's not just the decisions. When you're playing, are you playing with the hint system turned on, or did you turn it off?
Oh, I didn't even know there was a hint system. So,
like, I mean,
it turned off.
Not like a hint system, but it'll like show you the hot spots like in the environment, and it'll tell you like when somebody remembers something. Like, do you see that stuff?
Yeah, that's turned on. Yeah.
Okay, so like in addition to like these sort of like A or B type decisions, you can also choose to role play your character a certain way through the dialogue options. And the thing that's cool about that is that there's a sort of a help system if you're not like a hardcore adventure gamer. So the help system will show you the hotspots, but it'll also tell you about the impact your dialogue options are having on the characters that you're interacting with. Yeah. So if you choose to lie to somebody, the game will be like, this person doubts what you're saying. So like throughout the game, like when you have conversations with them in the future, they'll be like, hey, you know, like you're a pretty shitty liar. You need to, you know, do something about that. So
yeah, the whole game is based really around conversation and the relationships you NPCs, and like, you know, I was like really, I mean, in my game it's not a spoiler, but I was really nice to this guy and his family, and by the end of the first act that guy is like my buddy, and he, you know, comes and saves my ass, and like I have like a genuine attachment to this guy and his family. So it is pretty cool. And you know, there are characters from the comic book series and the television series that do make a cameo if you know who's who. So there's a little bit of overlapping with the narrative, but it's $5 for the first chapter on Xbox Live.
That's
and
not
it,
bad at
it's
all.
Honestly, yeah, it's honestly about 2.5-3 hours long for the first chapter, which is really good. It's almost as long as Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3.
Yeah.
So it's only $5. So definitely pick it up. Even if you're not an adventure gamer, it's incredible. It's very, very well done.
Yeah, there's a lot of appeal here. Like, if you know, for fans of Walking Dead, obviously this is a must buy. If you're a fan of like narrative, like dialogue style BioWare narrative, like it's a buy for you. If you were a fan of Heavy Rain, this is a buy for you. You know, and then if you're an adventure gamer, it's a buy for you. So there's like a lot of different things going on here, and it already seems like this game is gonna have tons of replay value.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Yep. Cool.
Good stuff.
So Ash, did you pick up Dragon's Dogma?
I played the demo. The demo went live on Tuesday, and I have been really curious about this game for quite a while, because this was, if you guys remember way back long ago in like Nerd Rated NA episode like 10, we were talking about how Capcom should do a really hardcore RPG and just shock everyone, you know?
Yeah.
And what would that RPG be like? Well, Dragon's Dogma is coming out very soon, and I encourage everyone to try the demo out. It's super short. There's two different chapters you can play in the demo, and you can probably get through both of them in, honestly, 20 minutes. I mean, they don't really give you a lot to go with. The thing I do have to point out about this demo, so it's a, you know, Dragon's Dogma, brand new hardcore RPG from Capcom. they don't really explain anything about the narrative in this demo at all. It's basically just to get you familiarized with the gameplay and the character customization. So the character customization for when you actually build your characters is really, really deep. You know, it's almost to BioWare levels of character customization. Oddly enough, you can make your character a child, which is weird.
That's different.
Yeah, you can make your character like child-sized, which probably leads to some creepy things on the internet later on. But anyway, I'm just saying, the internet's a terrifying place. But the thing about this that stood out for me, the Dragon's Dogma, is the combat. And it has a really nice combat system. It's really different. You can map, basically there's, you can map different abilities to different, it plays a lot like Dragon Age 2. Okay. That's you hold down a button and you open up a set of skills and yada, yada, yada. But, the thing that is probably the coolest is when you fight large scale enemies, like let's say, a griffin or a dragon or something like that, you can actually grapple it and then your character will jump onto that enemy's back. And then you can actually hack away at the enemy from like on top of the enemy and things like that. So the enemies are a lot more interactive.
Is it
and your companion
like God of War at that point?
It's not quick time, but okay. It is like you'll still have access to a number of your abilities while you're actually grappling onto a large opponent. But your companions, which are called pawns for some terrible reason. I hate that they're called pawns. But your companions will do things like grapple. Let's say you're fighting a kobold, one of them will get a kobold in like a full Nelson. And like shout like, hey, and then you can like, you know, line up an arrow and shoot them while they're grappled. So it seems as though your pawns in this have a lot more, you can interact with them a lot more. For instance, like flying enemies, if you have like a big companion on your side, he can actually launch you up into the sky, sort of like, you know, fastball special style.
Yeah.
But I really did enjoy the combat system. It's the narrative that I'm concerned about. If it doesn't have a good narrative, it's not going to be a good RPG, no matter how fun the combat is.
Is this getting made in Japan or stateside?
It's Japanese. It reeks of Japan. not in a bad way, but everything is very Japanese about this game. Like there's just menus all over the fucking place. They don't make any sense. There's a billion different buttons. You're just kind of looking at it like, what the hell? During the first part of the demo, you go up to this stone, right? And this like portal opens up from the sky and two people float down. And I guess they're your friends. And then they just like creepily wave at you with dead eyes. And you're like, what the fuck is going on? And they're just staring at you, like slowly waving at you. And you're like, oh, hey. And they're like, we are here to serve you. And you're like, oh, God, this is so what?
So here's a question. If this is a Japanese game, like these are my fears about a Japanese RPG is that there's going to be like score attack and like time speed runs. You know what I mean? So does the game keep a score? Oh, good. Well, that's great.
Yeah, I didn't see any score. I didn't see any time stuff. I should note that visually it looks very, very beautiful. The animation, like for shooting arrows and
it looks
just
like Skyrim.
Yeah, it looks a lot like it. It's third person. It's the world looked very beautiful. The enemies looked gorgeous. So I'm curious to see what happens when the actual game comes out and if the story's any good. If the story's good, it's going to be a hit because it's fun to play. It's just, you know, is it going to draw you in and actually make you want to finish it?
Well, from the trailer, they said something like, we were drawn to the dragons as puppets with fate's own thread or something like that. And I just remember thinking that's kind of cool. So maybe that's why they're called pawns. But my question is, why is the Emperor in there? Did he land it at Capcom when he like fell through the hole in Return of the Jedi? There's this character. I'm like, oh my God, it's the Emperor.
It's
the Space Pope.
The Space Pope.
Callback.
Yeah. Space Pope.
Natalie's the Space Pope, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
She is. Yeah, all right, know, so that is a good segue, good. Actually, into more RPG goodness. And Hillary finished The Witcher 2, and according to Hillary, there are more boobs in it. Yay.
There's boobs
European.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but the crazy thing is, no matter how different the girl looks, the boobs all look the same. Well, sorry.
That's anyway, true to life, right?
I guess so. Sure. Yeah, so I finished The Witcher 2, and it was actually quite good. So all of the bad stuff I said last week, I take back, and it totally redeemed itself in terms of story and how my choices affected the outcome. Combat improved. The visuals, awesome. Yeah, I mean, just a couple texture issues within the loading of the game. But yeah, I mean, it was amazing. And I'm glad that I made the choices that I made. So yeah, if you're looking for like a long kind of epic style RPG where choices are, you know, you start making choices from the get-go and they really tell the story, I would definitely recommend The Witcher 2. It is a time investment. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and even though I skipped through a lot of the dialogue at the forefront, I was able to pick that all that back up at the end. So I was very pleased with that. The story is quite good, but yeah.
How many hours did you sink into it, you think?
I would say probably 30, maybe more. I didn't really keep track, to be honest, and I felt like I was replaying bits when I died.
Yeah.
So it could be me going through it and then, you know, getting killed by some wraith and being upset.
How did you feel about the, because, you know, Witcher 1 was a PC only game, and so they moved this game, Witcher 2, over to Xbox. How did you feel about the menu system and having to do things like crafting potions and keeping track of like crafting items and stuff like that?
The inventory system was really kind of archaic, I'm not going to lie. I mean, at least within every world that you had a chest where you could store your stuff.
It seems
you only had so much that you could carry at a time, and that's pretty standard. But yeah, the inventory system could have been better, but I thought that the skill kind of assignment points were mm-hmm. really well played out. And you know, the type, you get a lot of variety in the type of player you want to be. If you want to be more magic heavy, if you want to be more, you know, combat heavy, or if you want your potions to be kick ass. So, you know, I really played heavy sword, heavy magic, and I didn't put anything in my alchemy just because I'm even on, you know, Elder Scrolls, the alchemy stuff kind of bores me.
Yeah, it's such a pain in the ass to go around and like, yeah. Just collecting like herbs and stuff. Yeah.
Who wants
to
pick flowers in a game?
There's a lot of that in the Witcher, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot. But no, I thought it was a really, in the end, I'm now more invested in the story, and hopefully, they definitely set you up for The Witcher 3. I'll definitely be buying that game. Was really good.
I'm really actually happy that you enjoyed it, because I've been looking for another RPG to play, and I may actually pick this one up now, so.
It might be of interest to you to know that the Witcher series is actually based off of novels written by like a Polish author. Like, it's a Polish game company that makes The Witcher, and so there's actually a lot of source material that the games are actually based off of. So I know you like to read like the Dragon Age novels and stuff like that. So there are Witcher novels as well.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
But the overall narrative was good too. You enjoyed the story, and you enjoyed betting lots of women with the same breasts, I take it.
Well, sometimes you get things out of it. So yeah, my Witcher was a bit of a player.
Whoa, heyo.
And you could change his hairstyle and stuff. So I was actually quite pleased with that, because I wasn't digging his first do. But that's pretty much the only customization.
Yeah. You can change his hairstyle if you bed women.
No, you can change your, there's merchants you can go to change the hair, but yeah, other than hair and armor, that you don't get to change his face, which I was sorely hoping I could.
Yeah, you didn't care.
No changing of the face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it, and we'll have to give it a play and then let you know what we think.
Yeah, definitely. I would definitely, it starts off slow, but give it time.
Yeah, that's what I hear. I hear the first act is slow, and then it gets really good once it opens up a bit.
Right.
Cool. I went and saw Cabin in the Woods. I can't, since no one else here has seen it, and it is a movie wrapped in mystery, really say much about Cabin in the Woods, other than everyone should go pretty much today and go see it, because written by Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon, directed by Drew Goddard, probably one of the most bizarre and entertaining horror films I've seen in about a year. It is incredible. It has a great cast. It is just a lot of fun, and it is not what you're expecting at all.
Now, I've heard this is kind of a screamish take on horror movies, right? Like it's like self-aware in its horror moviness.
Here's the deal. It's really, really smart. Mm-hmm. It's really smart, but it's not like Scream in that, you know, Scream just had a lot of like incredibly witty dialogue, and you know, it was like almost campy.
Witty dialogue.
Yeah, you know, some witty dialogue, and but Cabin in the Woods, it's a completely Joss Whedon look on horror,
yeah,
and which it's gonna make your brain kind of melt and be like, what in the hell is going on, and it almost seems like it could, and for fans of Buffy and Angel and Dollhouse and all that stuff, it's like you take a lot of the ideas that existed in those franchises and you smash them into a horror movie. And then you get Cabin in the Woods. So for me, it was like just a breath of fresh air because I love those franchises a whole lot. And seeing them all kind of back on the screen together in one big mashup was fucking incredible. So definitely go check it out. And, so oh, I also – yeah, oh, go ahead.
So no, on please. A scale of like scary between like The Ring on one end and, I don't know, super horror slasher like the Saw movies, yeah. Where does it fit within that genre?
That's a great question. There are a handful of jump scares, but I would say the majority of it, I mean, there's definitely some gore. People meet some very disgusting, unfortunate ends, but it's not torture porny, and I'm using finger quotes. They're not going to like sit there and linger, you know, with like a splinter slowly going into someone's eyeball for 35 seconds on the screen or anything like that. So, I mean, it is gory. There is, you know, some really nasty stuff that goes down. But for the most part, it is just very well written and really, really enjoyable. Awesome. So it's not something that's going to give you nightmares. Let's put it that way. So it's not anything Ring-like or Saw-like.
Hmm.
So definitely cool. Oh, and the other thing is we've been trying to get Amy Acker, an interview with Amy Acker, who was on Angel and later on Dollhouse. We've been trying to get an interview with her for probably over a year. And finally – the green light came through the other day. So we should have an interview with Amy Acker up pretty soon. And she, of course, played front and she's in Cabin in the Woods. So we're excited about that. So keep your eye on the site and you will see a nerd appropriate interview with Amy Acker. Yay.
That's awesome. Woo.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm excited.
And she was also on, she did one episode of Grimm and one episode of Once Upon a Time recently.
She was great. She was awesome. Once Upon a Time. Did you see that episode?
Yeah. She was great in both of them.
She was great. Yeah.
She I love both Grimm. Those shows.
She played like a man-eater on Grimm. It was amazing.
So I've caught up on Grimm and been watching Grimm, but Once Upon a Time, everybody's recommending now, I hear, right?
I love it.
So good. So good. And I
has Raphael Sabarge. You can't go wrong.
It does.
Aiden Malenko. There you go.
Yes. And he's pretty good. He's pretty damn good in Once Upon a Time. I got to hand it to him.
Yeah. He's awesome.
The Lost influence is very apparent. You can definitely see the pedigree in Once Upon a Time.
Once Upon a Time. Yeah.
Well, there's so much, you know, Jane Espenson, who's, you know, a Buffy writer producer, she writes and produces a lot of episodes, but Once Upon a Time too. So there's definitely this like old school Buffy vibe to a lot of the episodes too. And like the relationships between the characters and stuff, you can see like the essence of Buffy the Vampire Slayer kind of resonating in this show. And it just makes me super happy and it's good. So,
all right, well, I'll check it out. That was a side note. Sorry.
Yeah. That's okay.
Cool.
This week, the new Mass Effect miniseries started, which is Homeworlds. So here's the first issue, which features a story about James Vega. It's kind of told like in like this book is sort of told in a Lost flashback style. So you see the character now, and then it kind of goes into a backstory of sort of what their life was like before they signed up with the Normandy. It's pretty good. It doesn't really have like a lot to do with the main Mass Effect storyline. It's really like if you're interested in the backstory aspect. So if you just want more, I will say that the art style is pretty similar to the art style of the previous books, but it does seem a little softer. Like okay. I feel like some of the previous books had like more detail, like in sort of like shots of space and in cities and stuff like that. Do you have a question?
Is it the same team? Do you know, or
I don't know.
Pretty much all of the books have had the same team at this point, so.
Yeah, I mean, it is Mac Walters. I know that much.
Well, go ahead, continue. I'll look it up while you're talking.
Okay, so it's this one is Mac Walters and Eduardo Francisco.
I'm pretty sure it's the same team, then.
Yeah, I think some of the other books had three people credited, but this one only has two. I think this book, like many of the other books, had like a variant cover as well.
Awesome.
It's pretty good. I mean, it's not like, it's not going to fill in anything that, like, you know, like the other books, like if you read them, it would really enrich your experience with Mass Effect. And I don't think like this narrative is on that level, but you know, if you like reading Mass Effect stuff, like why not read this one? So,
yeah. What I understand that the Homeworld series is, each writer that actually wrote that character for BioWare is going to be writing that character again for the comic book series. So you're going to see all the different writers kind of telling the backstories of the characters that they wrote for Mass 3. So it should be pretty cool.
Yeah, it'll definitely deepen the relationships that you have with those characters. Like if you go back and play Mass 3, I guess my only complaint is that I wish this would have come out sooner. You know?
Yeah. That's true.
Like maybe, like I guess you couldn't really put it out before because that would ruin a lot of the narrative. But if the series started simultaneously with the launch of the game, I think that would help a lot. That would have helped a lot. So
yeah.
It is actually a new artist. So
that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. The art is different, but it's still good, and the story is interesting. So, if you want to deepen your relationship with these characters.
I have this question for you, Scott.
Okay.
My wife's been watching a lot of Saved by the Bell recently.
Okay.
I don't really know why, but sometimes
it's awesome.
Sometimes I'll walk in and I'll be like, man, Slater's really familiar. And I'll be like, oh man, Slater is pretty much James Vega.
Pretty much.
Like, hey, what's up, mama?
It's true.
It is. Isn't it crazy?
I was the first time I saw him in the game, I was like, oh my God, where's Zach?
It could have been Mario Lopez doing the voice acting and not Freddie Prinze Jr. Yeah.
Freddie Prinze did a great job, but
yes.
They should have just actually scanned Slater from the series, from Saved by the Bell, and just kind of pushed him into Mass 3.
Yeah.
With like tank top and the super giant mullet. And then the shorts.
FemShep could have like a nervous breakdown in the game and be like, I'm so excited, I'm so scared, you know, that kind of thing.
Sorry. We love it.
So you're still digging that?
I actually met Mario Lopez in Burbank, and he's an interesting fellow.
I would imagine. Oh,
is he exactly like AC Slater?
Yeah, and he's kind of, I don't know. It was just a really weird experience. He actually took my parking space. Downtown Burbank's really hard to park in. So mm-hmm. I was leaving and he was like trying to get his friend to take my spot. And he like walked up to my car and pretended to have a conversation with me, though I was not talking.
Oh, really?
He was like waiting. Yeah, he was waiting for some more cars to go because he saw his friend like four cars down and he wanted my spot. So I was like rolling down my window, just like staring at him, like, what? And he's just like pretending to talk to me. And I'm like, either you're crazy or I don't know what's going on. And so I just like, as soon as he stopped like pretending, I kind of said, are you waiting for me to leave? And he's like, yeah, I my buddy wants this spot. And I was like, have asked me.
He was acting there, by the way.
I know, like, you're very talented.
Yeah. Did he go,
you do such a
preppy,
great job on those beauty pageants.
Away?
I was just like, you know, there's a way to do things, and you could have absolutely, instead of like scaring the shit out of me by walking up to my car, because, you know, you're starting your car, all of a sudden dude is right in your window. I mean, it's not exactly like the coolest thing ever. So, he absolutely could have said, hey, can you hold on a second while my friend comes? But instead it was like this whole charade. Yeah. I was not impressed.
Wow. That shifty Slater.
Never I know. Trust him.
He was like 10 years older than everybody else anyway. It's just weird.
It was weird.
Yeah, right.
I want to mention, since we're on comics, really quick, X-Force, Uncanny X-Force, one of the best books Marvel puts out. Phil Noto is now doing the art officially on the book.
Ooh,
he was on this latest one.
Excellent.
And it's fucking really good. The art looks phenomenal. Rick Remender's still writing, who's probably one of the best writers out right now. You've heard me mention him a lot. The book is awesome, and at a good point to pick it up too. It kind of just started a new storyline with Phil, so
Cool. Excellent. We'll be right back with our open thread question, which was about new consoles and what is going to get you excited about them. So we will be right back.
So we had a very interesting question on our Twitter and also on nerdappropriate.com for you to participate with us. And the question was, with a new console on the horizon, what game or feature would make you excited enough to upgrade? So I'm going to step in here and say that there's not a whole lot that's going to divorce me from my Xbox 360. And it's going to take like a holodeck for me to be very, very excited. Although a holodeck would be pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So what do you guys think?
Well, that's kind of why I asked it, because I feel like we've hit a point in the console that that we're not growing at the rate that we were growing previously. So like hardware is getting better, but not at an insane pace for consoles. Like hardware is getting better just in the sense that it's getting cheaper, not necessarily so much faster that we're going to be able to do crazy things that we couldn't pull off with the 360. So obviously the graphics will step up and there's going to be little things, but is that really enough for anyone here to drop and be the early adopter at, you know, $500 or $600 on a new console?
No, I agree.
It's pretty tough.
It is. And I think it's interesting, but I mean, like all of these, you know, these companies keep putting out new versions of their engines and the engines keep getting nicer and nicer. We are getting to the point where the hardware does need to improve in order to support these new engines, like the new Unreal's coming out and the new Crytek engine's coming out. So you'll see the difference between a 360 and a high-end PC. So I think the next generation console is just going to have, you know, a lot more under the hood, so to speak. But in terms of getting me excited about that, I don't know. I mean, new hardware is going to be great and all, but do I want to plop down another, you know, $400 for that new hardware?
Especially
something that's just slightly better, you know?
Especially when I believe, I don't know about Hillary, but two out of at least the three of us have bought the Xbox 360 multiple times.
Yeah.
No, I have. I have two Xboxes and a PS3. And, you know, with the recent addition of Kinect and everything, I mean, yeah, I feel like I just bought a new 250-gigabyte Xbox. So I'm not really that excited to spend more money. You know, especially with games being, you know, $70 or more. You know, I can't wait. I'm not a patient person. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure it'll be fantastic and I'm sure we'll see things about it that are really, really cool. But for as speculation goes, I mean, it's interesting to see what people are saying on the Twitter feed and also online. So I guess we should jump to that.
Let's jump to it.
All right. Cool. So I'll start. So Cohen Malaflam said integration with my TV cable, picture in picture type stuff with a universal remote / keyboard, a beastly multimedia machine. That's awesome.
It's kind of like a Google TV mashup.
Yeah.
I have one.
Cohen uses his 360 a lot as like a source of, you know, like an entertainment hub, like a lot of Hulu, a lot of Netflix. And, you know, I have a lot of friends on live that you see on, you know, on Hulu and Netflix constantly, but having a nicer interface that makes it like a little bit more user friendly, and also, you know, kind of integrates those new hardware advances into the TV watching experience would be pretty cool. I mean, I don't really know how to pull it off, but it'd be awesome to
just on a very simple level. I think it would be nice even if you could just hook up an over the air antenna to your Xbox and pull in channels, even if you don't have like a cable provider. I think that would be cool to have that kind of integration, because there you wouldn't have to have any contracts with anybody. You would just need an antenna and you could just put the port in the back.
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome. So I agree with Cohen. I think having a better integration with TV cable would be great, rather than battling against other formats. Why not just kind of embrace and
I think we have a big format hug. I think we are really close to this idea of sort of a la carte TV. I think Comcast and Time Warner and Bright House and all of them are coming out with these apps now that integrate with your Xbox or integrate with your Apple TV or whatever. And you still have to have a subscription to cable. And I think we're slowly seeing this divergence or convergence, I guess it would be. I don't know, whatever. Like,
sure.
We're seeing these two paths cross where you're going to start paying a smaller fee and just having different kind of access to the cable channels as opposed to a cable box that you have 24 hours a day running shows that you're not watching.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
It's coming. I think the Xbox can do it.
So back to the wall, James Gamble, who is Desterado on Twitter, says, feature-wise, if they executed this, and James included a post to a YouTube video which shows like a sort of a mashup between a Kinect and a heads-up like motion display that you wear like glasses style, like VR style, with a Wii remote. And it's kind of a demo where you can turn your head side to side to look left and right, and then the gun has Wii remote style controls, so you can fire the gun based on where you're pointing the remote.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure where the Kinect fits in, but
actually your movement, how you moved your character was actually, you would actually move your body, and that's how your character actually turned and things like
that.
So it was
Kinect
full,
or the heads up display.
I think it was a combination of both. So his thing was saying basically like totally immersive, 100% VR is what would get him excited, because it included motion controls, a headset, and basically the demo, which we'll include in our show notes, was this example of what can be done with modern hardware. So it's pretty cool. I mean, I personally never want to have to wear a headset when I play games, and I don't really want to have to stand up and move. Kind of like sitting on the couch, but
lazy.
Yeah, I'm lazy. Standing and playing.
If they do make this, I know what the killer app is going to be. It's going to be a remake of Dactyl Nightmare. Do you ever play that at the mall?
No.
Remember? You don't remember? Like back when VR, when they first did it, you could go to the mall.
Oh, the big thing you lay down on your head.
Yeah. And you put like the gigantic VR headset over your face, and then they put you in this little like ring. And you played a game called Dactyl Nightmare, and it looked like, you know, it was like Max Headroom style graphics where you basically had like three platforms to run around on.
Yeah.
You shot at a pterodactyl, and it was amazing because it was like, you know, it was like the early 90s or something.
Nightmare, that's amazing.
God. Yeah.
So Bill went to our website this time to give a more long-form answer, and he says, honestly, other than the latest, greatest hardware, what more can they do? My 360 already plays games, streams movies, TV and music, uses cloud storage, downloads games instantly, and works with or without a control if you've got a Kinect. Helps manage social apps, lets you video chat, again with the Kinect, and surfs the web. I mean, with all the things you can already buy through Xbox Live, they might as well just put an Amazon app, which they'll never do, on there and be done with it.
But PS3 has that Amazon app now, so
well,
maybe...
Yep.
They don't have that market, though. I think Xbox is a more deep market.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, 360's come a long way. I mean, if you look back, you know, a couple of years ago, back when the Blades, and you looked at Xbox Live and it was the Blades and there was really nothing there other than your friends list, we've come a very, very long way since then. But now I think if you guys notice, when you're navigating live, it can be a bit clunky and a bit slow. Like right now when I load up my friends list, it takes like 20 seconds for everyone's pictures to pop up and doesn't really show you what they're playing until. So it that is all a RAM issue, and it's definitely, you know, it's time for new hardware to support this GUI that they have going. So I agree with Bill. I mean, live is awesome right now, but they're going to need to upgrade the hardware to support how awesome it is.
They are.
Do you ever log in through your computer to see who's online? Is that me
all
being a
time.
Crazy stalker?
No, I do it all the time.
Yeah.
I'm like, who's actually playing right now while I'm stuck at work?
Yeah.
Yeah. I open it on my phone on occasion when I'm at work, and then I curse at everyone because everyone's having fun and I'm not. So.
They they did leak their new music app, which they've codenamed Woodstock. And, you know, classic Microsoft, it's about a year or two late to the party, but it looks exactly like Spotify in the sense that you're going to be able to manage your library and stream all your different, you know, whatever from wherever kind of thing, as opposed to the way it is now, which is completely disconnected. So,
yeah,
you know, I think that kind of them combining media and making it more relevant to the way web apps have gone is probably a big part of it.
Man, if I could just get my Zune Pass on my iPhone, which will never happen, but that's all I want.
It will not.
Okay.
All right, next up is Kittler C, who actually responded on nerdappropriate.com, and he says, I'm afraid of the new consoles because somehow I doubt my massive Rock Band music library would transfer over. I say, Kittler, that Harmonix is such an awesome company that they would probably allow your library to transfer over. I don't know how they would pull it off, but Harmonix does not seem like the type of company that would make you buy everything again. So I would like to think that your library will be just fine with this new generation of console. So... And also, I should note that if you do have a longer response from now on, every week when we pose our Twitter question of the week, we will have it up on the site for you to reply to, because we were having some people that either don't like Twitter, don't like to use it, or have a long-winded answer that doesn't fit in the Twitter size response. So
cough, cough, always, Axel 99, cough, cough.
Yes. Yes, Jesse Lamb, who tweets like 8 in a row, which we love. But now you can just go and like write a little essay on the site.
Well, I'll have to rename this now, because it's not the Twitter question of the week anymore. It's just the nerd appropriate question of the week.
Oh, man, do we have to re-architect the Twitter walls?
This is, yes. Yeah.
Oh, no. Man.
I just got mine up.
I know.
We'll have to send on the wall.
Destroy our dreams.
Yes. What a
Matt, you can read this one.
I'll read this one because he always likes to make a joke for us. And he does it when he's online with me, and then he says something to me immediately after. So friend Ryan, you know, constant guest on the podcast in the past, at Physics for Poets says, Smell-O-Vision, holodeck, cup holders, and girlfriend.
Wow.
Can a console actually be a girlfriend? Is that like
I think if it could, Ryan would honestly never leave his house. So, and he already doesn't leave very much. So,
burn.
Smell of.
It wasn't a burn. It was just honest. I'm just saying.
Think about it.
He'd be totally happy.
I don't want Smell-O-Vision and girlfriend in the same one.
Yes. Smell-O-Vision, girlfriend, cup holder. That is a dangerous combination, if you know what I mean.
Oh, dude, God. That is all. I mean, I can string that together in a very bad way.
I think that was probably Ryan's point. If you add Smell-O-Vision, holodeck, cup holder, girlfriend, you get love.
Are you sure that's not just a math problem? Like Smell-O-Vision plus holodeck plus cup holder equals girlfriend? Is that what he was trying to say?
Yes. Yeah.
Can I ask a serious question?
Sure.
Yes.
with the holograms of Tupac or whatever that have happened, and this like this new way of kind of projecting video, do you think that consoles will ever merge into like a single unified piece of hardware that does everything? It's your Kinect, it's your projector, it's your hardware, like it's just an all-in-one beastly unit, as Cohen said.
Maybe when we're old and gray, but I think right now it'd be too hard to pull off. Yeah. That Tupac thing supposedly cost $200,000 to do for just one show. It was a series of like mirrors and all sorts of crazy crap. But if real like Star Wars holograms ever happened, sure. I mean, that'd be incredible.
Yeah. And, would you really spend $200,000 on that? I would rather buy a ticket on Virgin Galactic or whatever.
Oh yeah,
that's true. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Fly around in space.
Yeah.
Real life. Why would you want real life experiences over a video game hologram in your house?
Hey, there are people that would look at me and go, why don't you buy a house with that money? It's like, that's not as fun.
Yeah.
That's true.
I just keep thinking about something out of like Fahrenheit, where we're just talking to our video single walls ball. All the time. Yeah. That's what I'm afraid of.
So we're all talking to our computers right now.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's true. Has anyone answered this question yet? Ash, do you want to answer the question?
What?
Our question of the week. Yeah.
What? Where am I?
What are we talking about?
What's going on?
Oh, where am I? Yes. The question of the week. What is my answer? Well, it's funny. I don't like motion control, so I don't want anything to do with it. I think what would make me truly excited about a new generation of console would be having enough RAM and enough storage to actually create a persistent state world that you can access on a console that would have a game that would have enough processing power to actually generate a complete world that would be interactive for you and your friends to get on and go on and do ridiculous things, almost like the generation of a whole nother planet, but on a console. So you could where everything is actually persistent, meaning that you could go and like have a lasting impact on an event and have that event carry over for all other people to see.
So, so you're kind of saying that it's not like, you want the hardware, but you mainly are looking at like a launch title then.
Yeah.
It's going to be the game. Like to There's see... nothing that the console can do to make you buy it, but the games that come out with it.
Yeah. It's all about the software itself. I mean, I don't think how you interact with that software is all that important. I don't, I don't want to waggle with a Wii controller. I don't care about the Kinect and like yelling at the TV and all that stuff. Doesn't really matter to me in the end. I've tried it all and I always go back to the controller. But what I'd like to see is hardware powerful enough to support new software that is really, really innovative. So, yeah.
All right.
Cool.
Cool.
So Midtown 583 says Blu-ray.
Yeah. All he wants is Blu-ray.
It's Which, funny, I mean, though, it's got to happen, right? I mean, it's got to end up on the next
It probably
Xbox.
Will happen.
There's no way.
Well,
you think Sony
will
allow? Yeah, it's true.
Well, I feel like the next step is if it doesn't have Blu-ray, then all the games should be downloadable. Yeah, because right now they're constricted by the size, and it is kind of annoying to have two Mass Effect discs for the last two games. I'd rather just have one.
God, that was bad.
Even more annoying when you install it on your Xbox and you still have to change discs when you want it. And you're like, what? It's all on the hard drive. Just switch to the other place.
Correct.
Yeah, I literally, in the first 2 hours of playing Mass Effect, I think I changed the disc like 6 times. Yeah. I was like, seriously? I'm exercising, guys. I'm exercising.
Yeah. Like, why are you making me get up right now?
I know.
What if instead of a Blu-ray, they put out an Xbox with two DVD drives?
Old school style.
They're like, we solved it, guys.
Oh my god.
Yay. All right.
I think we skipped over Bethany's response.
Oh, did we? Sorry.
Oh, we did? Sorry,
yeah.
Bethany.
Bethany says it better have 4 to 8 player co-op dragon punching to get me interested. Maybe an SPRPG element, but mostly dragon punching.
Co-op is important, and I think if they can find a way to support larger co-op campaigns, whether that's, I don't know, a hardware or a software limitation, I don't really know. But there really haven't been very many 8-player co-op experiences, and I think part of that is a processing problem. If you're going to be generating the AI for enemies and letting 4 players interact with that AI, that's really, really hard to pull off.
Did the PS3 put out, what was it, MAG or something, that had like 16 or 24-player co-op or something?
It did, but it was
competitive.
PvP.
Yeah, it was PvP.
So it wasn't against AI. So I like Bethany's idea, because, I mean, one of the things that all of us Mass Effect multiplayer folks said is we'd love if we could have a bigger party, because, you know, 4 is small, especially when you have a large friends list and everybody wants to play. It's hard to say, well, you know, you have to sit out.
Yeah. Well, Gears got you to 5, right?
Yeah, Gears got you to 5, which was cool. All right. Next up is Marla, who is at CodeMarla on Twitter. And Marla says, touchscreen controller for sure. Hello, Nintendo. That way you can have custom controls for each game. I'm not excited for that. What about you guys? What do you guys think about the new Nintendo controller?
Like, I mean, her take on it is very different from what I think, you know, what they advertise as the vision of the touchscreen controller. So, like, CodeMarla sort of envisions it as a way to customize your experience. But I think Nintendo views it also as a way to add another screen so that you can do things on the screen that other players can't see, or do things on, like, take the HUD off the TV and put it on your screen, I guess, is another way they look at it, too.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before, and Ryan and I talked about this a bunch, is that Nintendo is always the innovator of the controller. Nintendo's always the first one to put out the new version of whatever you're doing, with I guess the exception of the Kinect, but I look at the Kinect as like kind of the next generation of motion controlling. And Nintendo, you know, I mean, they were the first to put vibrators in the controller, to put an analog stick. I know that was a joke. Everybody go ahead and make it really quick. Analog stick, and then motion controlling, and then now they're doing this secondary screen thing, and every time they do it, it always looks stupid. I think this thing isn't going to make sense until we see what they can really do with it. I mean, they just announced that what's the game with the Raving Rabbids, Rayman?
Well, it's Rayman. Yeah.
They just announced that there's AR to it, to where you can place things on the controller and then that will show up in your game. So like, they have these little miniature characters that you can you can place on the controller, and then that thing will show up in the game. And they're selling more shit to you.
It's gonna be like Skylanders all over again, right?
But but the point being that you know, there's things that this controller can do that I don't think they've talked about or really let out. You know, the feature set that this thing's gonna be able to pull off. So I don't know. It's interesting. I think that customizable control thing is smart if they did it.
It'd be wild, yeah.
I'm waiting for someone to try and say this guy's name, so please, someone do it.
That's right.
Oh, yes!
Samuli Rimplanen. Anyway, at Grell99, having a terabyte of space and ability to download games. Also free to okay ones. No? I guess I'll be smart and keep my PC.
Do they mean to say free to play?
Yeah. I think they
Free to play.
Yeah.
He was making a snarky joke, though, about how he already has this on his PC, so why would he go to console?
Yeah, that's true.
Because
I mean,
console's better.
Because I like sitting on my couch and playing video games. That's my answer.
Yeah.
Last but not least is Charge Toria Novalots at Relwise on Twitter. She is a proud member of Team Vanguard.
How could
and
you
she says, she says, would it be too much to ask for a Sonic game that does not suck? Oh, yeah. There's so many of the fallen greats, you know? If you look back and at some of the titles that have gotten worse over the years, and of course Sonic is on that list. So I don't know if you necessarily need a brand new piece of hardware to bring us a Sonic that doesn't suck, but...
Maybe that's the problem. There's never been hardware truly good enough to realize how good Sonic could be.
Yeah, yeah. No, I
agree.
You're
the Sega guy too. You would know. Yeah. That's your domain.
I mean, I played all the Sonics, but I don't know. I don't have the affinity for Sonic as a character that I think some people do. Mine. Mine's Shining Force. I want that shit back.
Yeah.
Good.
I could stand to have another Altered Beast.
Have you played Altered Beast since playing it?
I've played that in the arcade the last time I played it, and it was many moons ago, but that was amazing. You could turn into a werewolf and destroy things.
I bought I forget where I played it. It was like on some like classic gaming pack or something that I had, and I played it. I was like, this game is horrible. It's like,
it probably is pretty bad.
The idea of turning into, you know, like the werewolf guy and running around and punching things was great, and then actually play it, you're like, this is pointlessly stupid. But
it was much better in your head.
Yeah,
when
yeah,
you remember
yeah,
it.
Totally,
than
games are like that. Well,
did you guys ever play Tiny Toons on Genesis?
No.
That was the best.
Was
it
really
was the
good?
Best game.
I don't know
yeah,
if I
some, was,
like,
some of those Warner yeah. games are great, like DuckTales was like
yeah.
Capcom
I was gonna say,
game. That was awesome.
I had a Nintendo and DuckTales fucking ruled.
Yeah.
That was great. That was an amazing game. Had an awesome soundtrack too. Maybe that should be our outro music.
I would have played
Tiny
Toons.
Us if it's 20 years old, right?
I don't think we can play that.
we can play whatever. We just can't sell it.
Well, you
Wait,
don't
we're not
know
selling
man.
This podcast?
No, yeah. We're not currently. Are we still recording? What's happening
yeah.
right now?
We're not done yet, yeah.
All right. Who wants to outro? Not it.
Not my notes.
All right. That has been the podcast somehow. That was episode 57. Of course, you can go to Twitter at NerdAppropriate, Facebook / NerdAppropriate, Google+ / a lot of digits that somehow turn it into NerdAppropriate. NerdAppropriate.com. You can email three of us, at least at this point, at Matt, Scott, or Ash at NerdAppropriate. I think that's it. That is all the contact information we have. Thanks
Hillary,
for listening.
Hillary, drop some info about yourself.
So you can tweet at me at Hillary Heskett, Hillary with one L, Heskett with two T's. On Twitter, you can find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and I know one of you has a problem with LinkedIn, but LinkedIn is awesome. And
to me?
Yeah, I don't know. Last week you said something about LinkedIn.
Oh, I just don't understand it. It's like a weird, confusing link.
Oh, no, we can't do this again.
No, we're doing it.
Oh, no.
LinkedIn, no. I think I get it slightly more. It's like a professional Facebook where you don't talk about your babies, right? Is that right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's a place where you go to stalk people and see what they do at their daytime jobs and also maybe their nighttime jobs.
Whoa.
No.
Can I make a site where we stalk people just about nighttime jobs? Because that sounds really intriguing.
Yeah.
That's called Facebook.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm not good at Facebooking either.
Yeah. But you can find me in all of those. So go ahead and do that. And we'll be friends.
Awesome.
Yay, internet friends.
Yeah. All right, guys. Great. Well, thank you for listening to episode 57. Now let's go play some Mass Effect multiplayer.
Woo-hoo!
What?
Kill some phantoms.